Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, where it's all about making the ultimate leap from your 9 to 5 and building a business and life you love, all while doing it your way. I'm your host, Amanda Boleyn. Let's get started. Welcome back, my friends. I hope you had an amazing Thanksgiving, assuming that you celebrate Thanksgiving, but if not, regardless, I hope you had a fantastic weekend with your family or friends or doing whatever it was that gave you joy, and hopefully you were able to find some time for yourself and to do something that really makes you happy. I am hanging out with Ashley Gartland, who works with women entrepreneurs whose business is doing well, but who feel like a hot mess behind the scenes, and they know it's holding them back from reaching the next level. So Ashley helps them simplify their business and build a stronger foundation so they can experience more growth and fulfillment in their work and more freedom in their life. Can I get an amen? Like, yes, please. Ashley has been an entrepreneur since the age of 22 when she got her start as a freelance food writer. After working in editing, event planning, public relations, and digital publishing, Ashley launched her coaching practice to help overwhelmed entrepreneurs grow their business by doing less but better. And so in this episode, you're going to hear about Ashley's journey as an entrepreneur, learn how she found mentorship and coaching, find out how life circumstances helped her discover her passion, and discover how you can work 25 hours or less a week and still accomplish more, and hear about the power of the pause, which I love the power of the pause, and realize the importance of delegation. So here we have Ashley Gartland. This is all about simplifying your business and working smarter, not harder. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. Today we have the lovely opportunity to speak with Miss Ashley Gartland. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here chatting.
Yeah, well, I am too. You were such a treat and delight in Her Way Society, and I know that my members loved having you, especially it was a workshop environment. So I loved that you built in time that we could take a pause and actually fill out the workbook you gave us. But anyway, I digress. It's amazing. So I can't wait for you to come and share your wisdom with my entire audience this time and talk about how you run your business in 25 hours or less a week. And especially because a lot of my listeners tuning in find that, you know, they don't have a lot of time necessarily on their plate because they're running a side business or they're just getting their business started. And I think you're probably going to share a lot that can relate to anyone, whether they're a business owner or not, but just how can we be more streamlined in what it is that we do. So I would love for you to share a little bit about like exactly what you do now, and then share with us your journey leading up and how you found yourself where you are today.
Yeah. So where I'm at today is about 13 years into business as an entrepreneur, different businesses. Right now, I have really found my sweet spot as a business coach, and I help entrepreneurs and freelancers and small business owners stop feeling like their business is really like a hot mess behind the scenes and start streamlining their business so that they can grow more and with more focus and intention. And a lot of that looks like working less and enjoying their life more and still enjoying the great results in their business at the same time.
I love it. Okay. Talk to us a little bit then. How did you pivot necessarily into what it is that you're doing right now, and how did that transition come about?
Yeah. So I started off as a journalism major coming out of college, and I'll try and keep this to the short version of the story.
Well, we love stories. No worries.
Okay. Well, so I graduated from college, and I'm on the West Coast. I live in Portland now, and a lot of the journalism jobs are on the East Coast. And I really loved where I lived, and I really wanted to stay here near family and friends and in the environment that I loved. And so I didn't feel like I had a lot of options in the career department unless I went the freelance route, which I'd had a little bit of exposure to in college. And so I decided to give it a try. And I also was really attracted to the idea of continuing to set my own schedule and kind of work when I wanted to, kind of like you do when you're in college, setting your own schedule with your classes. And so I just went for it, and I worked a bunch of side jobs and grew my freelance business as a side hustle for about a year, and then went full time into it and did that for about 7 years. And I really kind of made a name for myself as a freelance food writer. I covered food trends here in Portland. I did some health stories. I wrote a lot about food and health and the intersection there. And there's a couple topics I covered, and I dabbled in some other things like PR and event planning. And I wrote a couple of books throughout those years. And And then at some point, I just felt a little bit done. I felt done like with the whole freelance food writing thing. And I felt like that there was something else that I was being called to do, and I just didn't know what it was. So there was a series of years of exploration of, hey, I don't really want to do this, but what do I want to do? And trying on a couple different things before I discovered that mentorship and business coaching was an actual thing, which may sound crazy that I didn't know it was a thing because I was in the entrepreneurial space for so long. But back then, you know, especially as a food writer, there was a lot of people doing business coaching or targeting that audience. And so I didn't really know it existed. And when I discovered that it existed, I realized how much I love being in that space and how much of an impact you can make. And so I went to coaching school because I felt like I had the business experience, but if I was going to coach, I really wanted to have experience in that modality. So I did that and then slowly started walking away from the freelance opportunities and moving towards building my next business. And that was about 4 years ago that I started building it. And you know, here we are today.
Yeah. Well, did you always know then too, when you, like, you always knew you wanted to do something with coaching, and I love how you took the effort, took the step and invested your time and energy to get, you know, education on coaching. But how did you always know that you wanted to do and help people with streamlining their business, or how has that changed from when you started 4 years ago? Is it the same? Is it different?
Yeah. Oh, it's so different. You know, it's almost like peeling back the layers of an onion, you know, like you're just kind of figuring it out as you go. And it took a while for me to see what my superpower is, which is helping people simplify. And I can see it now in the work that I used to do as a writer and in the way that I run my life and the things that I help friends and family with, like that is a strength that I have, but I didn't at first see how useful it was to overwhelm business owners who, you know, feel like their business is a hot mess and who know that if they keep operating the way they're operating, they can't grow it to the point that they want to grow. So it did take a while, and I just had to really pay attention to the clues that were there and also, you know, invest and support myself and get people who could mirror things for me and reflect things and offer new perspectives to help me uncover what it was that I wanted to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And I would love for you to share. So when you started out, were you only working 25 hours? Has that changed? And then walk us through that journey of how you pared back and basically stripped any noise from it and got it down to running a full-time business on a part-time hourly amount per week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is little insert caveat. I thought about that personally for me. I'm like, okay, what if I could run my business in 30 hours a week or 25 hours a week? And I think honestly, my indirect fear or subconscious fear is like, well, what the heck would I do with the other time, right?
That's the part.
And so I'm sure you could probably speak to that, or it's like actually learning, there was an experience, like just recently I was in a position where I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I can actually do that tomorrow. I don't need to do it today, but I only, let's say, worked 5 hours today. And it's like this actually having the courage to say like, no, this can wait versus, mm-hmm. Oh, got to do it now. So I hope, and I assume, and I would imagine like all of the feels you're probably going to share with us during that process from what you were before to now 25 hours or less a week.
Yeah. So a little bit, of it is mindset shifts, and a little bit of it is life circumstances. So back when I was a freelance food writer working all the side jobs, I worked every day, all the hours, like any hour that I could work that, you know, I wasn't working with the side jobs, I was working on my freelance business. And that kind of carried through for quite a few years. Even when I went full time in the business, there's always more that I could be doing. There was more pitches I could send out. There was more learning I could be doing in my field. Like there was just so much more that I could do. So I don't know how many hours I worked a week then, but it was a lot. And there was also a lot of wasted hours, like a lot of kind of passive action that wasn't really making a difference. So that's kind of where it was before. And then life circumstances that changed, like I had a baby and I didn't have as many hours to work a week. And so I needed to start making some changes then. And as I started to see that I could get just as much done as I had before by kind of shifting how I worked, I became very attracted to the idea of working less, and first had to get clear on, you know, why I wanted to do that. I think that's the piece where you're talking about, Amanda, where you like, well, I could work 25 hours a week or 30 hours a week and that could be it, but what would I do with all that other time? So it's about figuring out why you want to do that. And so for me, it's my family, but it's also, I'm a big health nut and I really enjoy movement and taking care of myself and getting a good amount of sleep. And so those two things for me are why I want to work less.
Yeah. Well, so here's a follow-up question too. During that process of scaling back the hours, and there's some circumstances like having a baby is definitely like part of that as well. Did you ever meet resistance early on? Because I can imagine maybe some people are tuning in and listening and saying like, oh, that's just not normal, or that's like not feasible. Like, I can't believe someone only works that many hours. Like, I know that when like 10 years ago when I was I in college? I don't remember. Yes, I was still in college. And I like people ran businesses, and I first heard of online marketing, and I like started to meet people who were very successful in online business. And I was like, yeah, well that's not possible. You know, like that type of mindset. But then now like believing that it is possible to run a very successful business on 25 hours a week, like did you meet any resistance when you started exploring that, or were you totally on board?
Oh, I definitely met resistance. Like, yes, like I had a lot of doubt around it. So in some ways my hand was forced because the circumstances dictated how many hours I had to work each week. But I think what I see a lot of my clients are is like, they love their work and they're workaholics and they're high achievers. And so there is a lot of, they do meet a lot of resistance from their own selves when they're trying to do this. So they have to, in some ways, just trust the process. But I think the other thing is to just be curious. And I think curiosity is such a useful tool here, where you can say, what would that look like if I worked a little bit less and lived a little bit more? And what would that feel like? And do I want to experiment with it for like a week or two or a month and see how it goes, and then adjust and revise from there? So I think curiosity is really a good tool in this case.
Mm-hmm. I know, because you said that, you know, one of the places and times when you've grown the most in your business is when you found that like working the least, which is completely surprised you.
No.
Because you're someone who thought like you had to work hard as the only way of success. And especially it works for some people to work and hustle. And for others, it's almost like, okay, is there a way to work smarter? So I know you previously mentioned about 5 or 10 minutes ago about some strategies. And, you know, one of the things that you said was asking yourself why, and especially if you're in a position where it's like that option, or maybe there's not necessarily an outside circumstance, it's just really figuring out why. But like tactically, what can my listeners do to really start stripping noise and to become more work smarter, not harder?
Yeah. So there's 4 big ones. So I definitely want to talk through them, but I want to be like super conversational. So insert questions as they go. But the first one is really focusing on doing less, but doing it better. So where you're saying, you know, like you're still working hard when you run a simple business and you run a streamlined business, you're still working hard and you're still embracing growth. You're just not necessarily working more or overdoing it. So when you focus on doing less, but doing a really good job at it, it means that you're not subscribing to the belief that you need to be everywhere, wearing all the hats, being on all the platforms, doing all the things to run and grow your business. Instead, what it looks like is you pick a few very focused activities or strategies, and then you double down on those instead of spreading yourself too thin.
I have a question. Now, okay, so how does someone decide, what are some questions, or how does someone decide which activities do they double down on per se, and maybe move away from doing the other stuff?
Mm-hmm. So first I would look at all the activities that you're doing. Marketing is such a good example. So let's just use that. You write down all the activities that you do to market your business, and then ask yourself which one on this list is actually driving results. And I can guarantee that there's going to be a couple things on that list that might be giving you a trickle of results, but not anything substantial. And there will be things on that list where you're like, when I do that, my business grows. When I do that, clients come in the door, or products sell, you know, or I get featured, whatever it is. You'll be able to start to see what are the things that drive your results. And then you pick a few of those and again, get curious, and you can experiment a little bit. So there's a little bit of experimentation with this step. And then you start what I like to call the rinse and repeat approach. So like, I know for me in my business that when I do podcasts, when I do workshops, that those things grow my business far more than spending a bunch of time and effort on social media does. That's just for me. So mm-hmm. I know that if I use the rinse and repeat approach and continually do podcast interviews and do workshops for groups, that that's going to grow my business. And I don't need to spend as much time and energy each week worrying about social media. So I only spend, you know, like 30 minutes to an hour a week worrying about social media. And I spend a lot more time focusing on outreach to places I want to do workshops for.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a good reminder too, that while social media, there's numbers and it's a way to connect with people, it's sometimes not necessarily the best in terms of driving business or mm-hmm. most effective use of someone's time. But it could be, but it might not be.
And it could be.
It's a good reminder to really dive in and be like, I love how you say be curious about it, because it's almost a mindset shift too, that when we give ourselves be curious about something, we give ourselves permission to be curious, and it kind of takes the pressure off of trying to make sure, or at least for me, it takes the pressure off of having to have it all figured out, because you're mm-hmm. more comfortable with, well, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to be curious about it and I'm going to experiment and see what this does. And if it doesn't work, great. I'm going to go tweak and do something different.
Yeah. And then when it does stick, then you keep it and you refine it and you can do it in slightly different ways. Like, I didn't start off pitching podcasts and leading workshops. I started off with just podcasts. And then I thought, hey, I could do exactly what I do on podcasts in workshop settings for people's groups. So then I started doing that. So it was another layer, but it doesn't take tons of time and energy and effort for me to take that same approach and do it in a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. Okay. Continue, please, on all your goodness.
All right. So another thing that I have learned to do that I did not do originally was have really firm boundaries and know when to say no. And this is a really hard one for a lot of people, because a lot of us are people pleasers and we just want to add value and we want to be generous and we want to help everybody. But when you only have, you know, say 25 hours a week or 10 hours a week to work in your business, like, you have to be very, very clear on what things you're spending your time on and what requests of your time that you need to say no to. So, like I said, this one's really hard to do. I think I can't think of many people who have an easy time saying no when someone asks them for something. So I actually have a little trick here that I like to use personally that I really encourage my clients to use. And I call it the power of the pause. So basically, I encourage people to never say the knee-jerk yes right away to anything that they haven't already, you know, contractually committed to. So if you have stuff that you said you do for your clients, like, that's already a given yes. But if they're asking you for extra things as your clients, don't say a knee-jerk yes right away. Or if someone's asking you to speak somewhere, if somebody is asking you to, you know, donate some time for something, just don't say yes right away. Your response instead can be, let me make sure this is a good fit for me, or let me check my schedule. I need to make sure I have that time available, and then I'll get back to you in X number of hours or X number of days. And what that does is it gives you a little bit of breathing room to really evaluate the opportunity and make sure that you do want to say yes and you do want to commit and it is a good fit for your limited time. And if it's not, then you can come back to them and say, I checked my schedule. I just don't have the time available. And maybe you give them something instead. Here's what I'd love to do instead for you. Or I'd love to connect you with this person who I think would be a great resource for you. So it's a really great way of still feeling good about it, but giving yourself space to say no and keep those firm boundaries in place.
I love the power of the pause.
Yeah, you have to do it. Like, and it's, I like having a little phrase, because otherwise we just jump right in with a yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've definitely been guilty. It's getting better, but yeah, I like the power of the pause.
Yeah, and it can work in life too. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, we're handling our side hustle and our day job just fine. Like, we're doing a good job of juggling those two things, but it's when some of those yeses in outside life, when we overcommit for other things in our life, that it becomes too much. And so you can also use this in life too, to make sure that you're protecting your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's so true, especially social calendars and things like that as well. And yeah. I think, again, and I'm saying this, like, no surprise, guys, like, things that I say or questions that I ask probably come from personal experience. So, which I'm pretty open about, just my journey in general, but thinking about, especially with social media and thinking that we have to be everywhere and all the time. And then if we're not there and maybe we said no to something and we see something happen, we're like, FOMO creeps in, and it's just all about resetting and knowing, like, staying strong as to why you chose to take the power of the pause and politely declined or whatever that may look like as well. And knowing you can frame whatever situation and experience the way that you want to frame it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you have more? I wasn't sure. I don't want to move on. Yes.
Yeah,
yes. I love it. You guys, I'm like hanging out in Chicago, like, with my arms up and down going, yes, give me more. I love this stuff.
Good. So the next thing that I really have learned to do in my business, and this, I heard you do this great podcast interview or episode lately where you're talking about massive action versus passive action. This kind of relates in that I really preach being proactive in your business, not reactive. So what happens, and the reason so many of us work so many hours is because we're spending so much time putting out fires or maybe like dinking around on social media or consuming content mindlessly that like maybe isn't the best use of our time or really going to help our business grow. And what you need to commit to instead is being really proactive and doing those big picture projects, working on your business, taking massive action on the things that are going to drive results for you, and then doing the reactive stuff after that. So this one's a hard thing to do because, you know, we're pretty much being pinged all day with notifications and emails and requests. So you really have to get into a mindset where you're putting your own work first and the most important work first. But once you do that, you can really see a lot of results with very little time put in.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I know which one the episode that you're talking about too, because oftentimes mm-hmm. when we take massive action, it's really when we get uncomfortable, which is why a lot of people, when we start taking action and we start feeling that massive action, we meet the resistance because it's uncomfortable and we put ourselves out there versus passive action. It's easy to hang out at the sidelines and not get into the arena or not get into the game, where massive action, you're just straight up like opening yourselves up to mm-hmm. vulnerability and like clients potentially shutting you down, getting a no told to you. But man, that is the quickest surefire way to get stuff done. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I think that a lot of us say that we don't have time to do those things in our own business, but it's really fear talking. Right. And so
yeah,
exactly what you're saying. You have to stretch yourself a little bit, but very practically too, you want to carve out some space in your calendar for it. So whether that looks like the first 30 minutes of every day you're working on your business, or if you know, are working a day job and you have Saturday or Sunday part of the day carved out, and that's your time to work on your big picture projects and be proactive in your business, you have to set that time, carve it out, and then you have to commit to it and make sure that you keep that and honor that commitment with yourself.
Mm-hmm. I was just listening to, I forget what podcast it was, but talking about urges, because sometimes we'll be, and I do this probably more often than I'd like to admit, but if we're, sometimes it's like we're in the creative flow, and if we have something on a calendar, at least for me, I'll want to stay in that creative flow, but sometimes it's like fighting the urge and actually just executing and doing what my calendar says versus just playing the Tetris game with it and wanting to rearrange it.
Yeah. And there can be a little bit of both. But when you're starting to get into the habit of being proactive, I think it's so important to commit to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the final one is really about delegation. And I say this coming from someone who used to be the queen of doing it all myself. You know, when I was a freelancer, I did the pitching, the writing, the transcribing, the grocery shopping, because I was doing recipe testing too. Like, I did not outsource a single thing for my business. And I look back now, and I realized that I wasted a lot of time that I could have been growing my business. And so I look at that now, and I think what's created a lot of opportunities for success now and allowed me to work less and still run a profitable business is that I have figured out how to delegate in a way that doesn't require a lot of huge commitments, but still lets me reap a lot of results. So I frame it that way because I think a lot of people think that it's going to be too expensive to delegate, or it's going to take too much time to train somebody, or that they need a giant team in place to benefit from it. But it can actually look like outsourcing a project to a contractor or a freelancer, just a one-off thing, and getting it off your plate. Or maybe it looks like setting up an automation, like setting up a scheduling system for yourself. Instead of scheduling all your appointments manually, you could like bring in a scheduler that would do it for you and save you hours each week for mere bucks a month. Or it can look like, you know, kind of the route that I've chosen, which is bringing on just one amazing team member on a part-time basis and letting them handle the things that you really are not effective or efficient at, so that you can focus more of your time again on those big picture things.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I would say one of the best decisions was to bring on Kim, my VA, and she has radically changed and freed up so much of my time from doing the podcast production and putting things together and show notes that I used to do. And now I get so much more, not only time, but energy and mental space back as well. And yeah, like you said, it doesn't have to be this like grandiose, like full-time team member. You can easily find a contractor through even personal network, or there's a lot of Facebook groups out there. You can go on Fiverr, you can go on Upwork, and put that out there as well.
Yeah, and do it in a really effective, affordable way for your business. Like, it doesn't have to cost you tons. You don't have to do a bunch of training, or you know, have employees for 40 hours a week. Like, you can do it so simply, and it does free up your time. And then the key there is in using that time for something that's really high value.
Mm-hmm. Was there a way that you decided like what was high value, or how does someone decide that?
Yeah. So it's like going back to what are the things that only I can do, the things that are going to grow my business. I think the framework is like looking at all the tasks you do in your business. And I call this the task audit. I do this with almost all my clients, but we literally have them do a brain dump and write down every single thing they do in their business. And then we look at that, and I have them circle the things that only they can do. So this means like, if you're a coach, obviously you're like almost always you're doing the coaching. If you're a designer, you're doing the designing. If you're a freelance writer, you're very likely the person who's going to be doing the writing. So those tasks and a couple other things are usually the things that you need to maintain ownership of. And then the rest of the stuff is stuff that can go. And that's where we'll look at the rest of the list, and we'll start to say like, could an automation or a tool or a system fix this problem for you or handle this thing for you for very little cost? Or is it time to bring on somebody on a part-time basis? Or is it time to, you know, hire a designer to handle this stuff for you once and for all and have it be done, so you have templates in place going forward in your business? Like, there's lots of different things that you can do, but you've got to identify what are the things that only you can do, and what are the things that someone else could do more effective and efficiently than you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one question I do want to ask you is, looking back, what is something you wish you would have invested in sooner in your business?
I'm going to have to say support. Like, I've spent 10 years in my freelance writing business, roughly 10 years, doing it all myself. And I mean, if I had just outsourced the transcribing of my interviews, like I did a lot of interviews, if I had just done that, I would have gotten myself back hours a week, and I could have used those hours each week to pitch new stories, to work on passion projects, to write another book. Like, there's so much I could have done with that time, and it would have cost me, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received at this point?
I think start now. You know, as someone who's a little bit of a perfectionist, and I'm a big planner, so I really like to have detailed plans in place before I jump into something. So the best advice I've ever received is just get started. You know, when I was starting my coaching business, it was like, just put a landing page up, start calling yourself a coach, figure out the rest later. And I think that served me really well, because that advice kind of counters my natural tendencies, and I can kind of meet in the middle with a good plan and also some action.
Mm-hmm. Love me some planning time. I think planning, you going back to what you were saying before, to not be in a reactive mode. If you actually carve out time to plan, then you can almost, which there'll be an upcoming podcast episode, if it doesn't release any, it'll release sometime around this one. but just going through and really identifying that, okay, if these are my goals, and then these are the action items that I take, and then I put them on my calendar, I just really need to just show up and execute on them. And then you can reach your goals. But I was going to ask you, how is your client, so many times our clients in the beginning stages of our business change from when they were in the beginning to where they are now. And as someone who has a service-based business, how have you grown as a business owner taking on business clients in the beginning stages to now? I guess what I'm getting to is like the vetting process. Like, are you taking on, can you identify people from the early stages, like who's serious, who's not? Like, how has that looked?
So the vetting process for clients, or how my clients have changed from those first years?
I guess in the first year, right? Like in the first year of business, we take everyone, right? And then, so how has that process evolved for you personally from like having your business and like being more, like you were saying, you know, back to the saying no, or like, no, this isn't a good fit. Like, talk to us about that journey of it.
Yeah. So I think that I didn't repeat that mistake when I started my coaching business. I definitely made it as a freelance writer. So I was a food writer, but at the very start, I did so many other types of writing that were just really outside my interest level and my expertise, and just kind of bizarre assignments here and there. So I was definitely a generalist up front there. And my business started to take off when I started to narrow down and become known as someone who wrote about health and food trends and, you know, really focus that in. So I had that experience to build on when I pivoted and started my coaching business. I also had a lot of people saying, you needed to niche down, you need to narrow down if you're going to be successful as a coach. So I definitely went into it and didn't take everybody and everyone as clients. Where I did start was with newer entrepreneurs. And what has shifted is I now work with a little bit more, for the most part, people who are in the 2 to 5 year stage of their business, and they've had some growth and they've had some success, and they see that more is possible for them, but they can't quite figure out how to reach the next level because things are just a little too complicated where they're at right now.
Love it. So as someone who is very like streamlined, organized, work smarter, not harder, I have to know, what are some of your favorite software tools?
Oh yeah. So Loom is a one that I use. I mean, I've used it like 3 times today with clients.
Love.
I don't know if you've used it before. Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah, it's great. So I think their tagline is something along the lines of, you can talk faster than you can type. And it saves me so much time because I do a lot of content reviews and website reviews and those types of things for my clients. And if I was going to type out all the notes, it would take me hours. But to do a screenshot and really share the thought process and just take them behind the scenes of my business and share different processes or systems or tools, it just takes me mere minutes. And I love that. So Loom is really a big one that I use. I also use Trello for both my own project management. And I also have a Trello board for each of my clients. We call it like our online bulletin board. And it's where we keep everything like show notes and, or not show notes, but call notes and checklists and resources and everything. So it's all in one place for them. So those are the two that I would say I use daily in my business, and they're fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are so good. I also love Voxer as well.
Yes.
It's been around for forever, and I feel like it wasn't until maybe the past year, year and a half or so, that it actually became re-popular, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe
I use that with my, I use that with my mastermind group, not one that I'm in, and we just Voxer back and forth. So we have really a high touch mastermind group without having to get on call. So it's great.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Okay, let's move into rapid fire round. So these are meant to be quick and fast, whatever comes to mind at the start. And so the first question I have for you is, what is something in your life that is a non-negotiable?
I'm going to cheat and I'm going to pick two. One is movement. It's so important for me to move. It's where I get a lot of inspiration, ideas, and it's just so important for me to move my body before I sit all day doing client calls. And then the second thing that's super important to me is my family often does what we call lazy Sunday mornings. And it's just really unstructured, unplanned, unscheduled time for us to spend time together in our pajamas and, you know, hanging out and not having an agenda. And that is something that has become a non-negotiable over these last couple of years.
I love that. What is something, or like, what is one thing that you get your inspiration from?
So my knee-jerk reaction is just being outdoors. But if I really being honest, I think it's stories. So I am a sucker for a great novel, for a movie with like a well-written script, or one of those really shows that surprises and delights you with like great writing or great acting. So like stories are something I find hugely inspiring.
Mm-hmm. What is, what's your favorite quote that you live by?
Probably one that I heard in high school. We read Thoreau in high school. It was one of the, you know, books that I think almost everyone reads in high school. And the quote, simplify, simplify, simplify. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how instrumental it would be in my life back then, but it's on repeat for me a lot these days.
Yes. And then the last question I have, second to last question. So let me back that up. What's the best $100 or less purchase one can make in their business?
You know, as much as I like all those tech tools we just talked about, I am such a pen and paper gal. So I really think that investing in a good planner, one that is not super detailed, but one that actually helps you narrow down your focus, is great. And so I really like the Get to Work book. It's by Elise Joy, I think is the brand. And then the Productivity Planner is another one that I like. It's not about planning out your schedule, but it's about identifying tasks for your week and really getting focused that way. So I love both of those for under $100 purchase.
Yeah, those are so good. I have Michael Hyatt's Full Focus Planner, and that one's really good too. So I'll just toss that one in there. But this has been absolutely amazing. Ashley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So two last questions. Anything else that specifically you'd like to share on the show? And then two, where can my listeners find out more about you?
So I want to just share that the things that I talked about today, these best practices for working less in your business and simplifying and streamlining your business, are all something that I've kind of compiled inside of my free Simplify Your Business Guide. So if your audience wants to just grab those so they can work through the workbook and like put these things in play in their own business, they can get it at ashleymgarland.com/simplify.
Okay. Amazing. We'll go ahead and include that in the show notes. You guys can check that out as well, but thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I know I really enjoyed it, and I know my listeners are going to get so much out of it, and it's awesome. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me, Amanda.
If you enjoyed today's podcast episode, you can head on over to shediditherwaypodcast.com, where you can access the entire vault of She Did It Her Way podcast episodes and more information all about how to make the ultimate leap from your 9-to-5. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would be so grateful if you headed on over to iTunes and left a review letting me know what you love about the She Did It Her Way podcast. Until next time, keep doing it your way.